All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here in the text, Genesis 41. We'll now do verses 46 through 49 as a block as we now address the 7 years of plenty as prophesied of Pharaoh's dream. Looking at the Hebrew here, verse 46, now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Wow, conjunction, proper noun, Joseph, now Joseph, 30 years old is in the Hebrew, a son of 30 years. You have the common masculine singular noun construct, Ben, B-E-N, the son of, followed with the adjective, both plural, absolute, or number 30, Shiloshim, S-H-E-L-O-S-H-I-Y-M. Follow with then the noun for years, common feminine singular, absolute, Shana, S-H-A-N-A-H. When he stood is the preposition bet with the cal infinitive construct, our verb adad, A-D-A-D. Before Pharaoh, literally before the presence of Pharaoh, before the face of Pharaoh, as it would be literally in the Hebrew, yet the preposition lamed, followed with the common both plural construct noun, paneh, for face, P-A-N-E-H, hence presence. Pharaoh, proper noun. King is your common masculine construct noun, melek, M-E-L-E-K. We saw that description used of his father, Amenhotep the first. Now we see it as Sesostris to show that he is the absolute ruler at this point in time in history. Of Egypt, proper noun. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. Wow, consecutive. Cal imperfect third masculine singular, our verb to go out is Yatsah, Y-A-T-S-A. Joseph, proper noun. Before the presence of, you have the preposition men here, then our same construct here, preposition lamed, and our noun for face, paneh, P-A-N-E-H, common both plural construct, Pharaoh, proper noun, and went through all the land of Egypt, wow, consecutive, our verb to translate went through is the cal imperfect third masculine singular, avar, A-B-A-R, passed over, went through, in or on all the land of Egypt. Preposition bet, followed with a common masculine singular construct noun kol, K-O-L, all, eretz, land, common feminine singular construct noun, E-R-E-T-S, proper noun Egypt. Verse 47, and during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. Well, consecutive, then our, first you have our verb to bring forth in the Hebrew cal imperfect third feminine singular asah, A-S-A-H. The land is definite article followed with a common feminine singular absolute eretz, E-R-E-T-S. During the 7 years then comes in the Hebrew that phrase preposition bet, our adjective for number seven, feminine singular, absolute, Sheba, S-H-E-B-A. Years, again, Shana, common feminine plural construct, S-H-A-N-A-H. The plenty. Of plenty or the plenty, you have the definite article with the common masculine singular noun, absolute, Sava, S-A-B-A. Then you have the preposition, Lamed, followed with the common masculine plural absolute noun comets, Q-O-M-E-T-S, literally means closed hand or fist, to grasp for the handfuls, translated our with our word abundantly. Verse 48. So he gathered all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt, and placed the food in the cities. He place in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Wow, consecutive, our verb together. Cal and perfect third maximum singer, kabats, Q-A-B-A-T-S. All the food, sign a direct object, follow with the common maximum singer, construct coal, all, K-O-L. Then our noun for food, common maximum singer, construct okel, O-K-E-L. The 7 years, our number sevens, repeated, adjective feminine singer, sheba, S-H-E-B-A. Years, shana, common feminine plural noun, S-H-A-N-A-H. Then you have the relative pronoun, asher, A-S-H-E-R, which came to pass or occurred, as is translated in our English. You have the cow, perfect third common plural, hayah, H-A-Y-A-H, the land of Egypt, preposition bet, Eretz, again land, Egypt, proper noun, same construct as we saw earlier. And he put the food in the cities. Wow, consecutive. Cal, perfect third masculine singer, verb, nathan, literally to give, hence put, gave, N-A-T-H-A-N. Okel, our noun for food again, O-K-E-L, common masculine singer, absolute. In the cities, preposition bet, definite article, our noun for cities, ear, common feminine plural, I-Y-R. And then the final phrase of food from its own surrounding fields. You have a common masculine singer construct our noun for food repeated, okel, O-K-E-L. Then follow with our noun for fields, common masculine construct sadeh, S-A-D-E-H, the fields of. City, definite article, followed with ear again, common feminine singer noun. Then on surrounding fields you have the relative pronoun asher, S-H-E-R, which, literally surrounding it. You have the adverb, third feminine singer suffix, sabib, S-A-B-I-Y-B. He placed in its midst, that's the last of your Hebrew phrasing here, nathan, again, to give, or put, placed, cal, perfect third masculine singer, in, preposition bet, and then the midst, in other words, the granaries that he established would be centralized within the urban areas of the cities. You had a common masculine singer, constructor, feminine singer, suffix noun, taweki. T-A-W-E-K-E, in its midst. Verse 49, thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring, for it is beyond measure. As we mentioned earlier, while 20% tax seemed kind of stiff, you can see just how much bounty the grain was produced over these 7 years. So, was any sweat off anybody's back here, economically? You have the wow consecutive, then our verb to store up is a cow, imperfect third masculine singer, tasabar, T-A-S-A-B-A-R, proper noun, Joseph, doing the storing. Then our noun for grain is a common masculine singer, absolute, bar, B-A-R. Then you have like the sand of the seashore. You have the preposition cough, followed with our common masculine singer noun, construct coal, C-H-O-L, the sand of the sea or seashore, definite article, common masculine singer, absolute, yam, our typical word for sea, ocean. And then our phrase great abundance is the verb hifil, inform, infinitive absolute rava, R-A-B-A-H, causing to become great or much, followed with the adverb meod, M-E-O-D, exceedingly, overflowing, is the idea. Preposition ad, as they continue to collect, obviously they was keeping accounting records as one would expect of someone who has their act together and all this, until it became impossible to keep records. Preposition odd, ad, until, follows the conjunction key, that, K-I-Y. He stopped, as Joseph, and making sure the recording is done. Cal, perfect third, Max, and Senior, Cadal, C-H-A-D-A-L. Give his weekly report to Pharaoh, how much they had in storage. And then one day he just walks in, man, we can't keep up with it. So. Preposition lamed, Cal, infinitive construct. Our word to measure is the verb safar, S-A-P-H-A-R, to counting, measuring. He ceased or stopped counting or to measure. Conjunction key with the conjunction ayin, A-Y-I-N. Because it became unsearchable, it is beyond, is the idea of the of those two conjunctions. Because it was beyond measure or number. You have the common masculine singular noun, absolute, misipar, M-I-S-E-P-P-A-R. All right, we're reading the four verses here. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and passed through or went through all the land of Egypt. Verse 47, and during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly by the handfuls. It would be the idiom. In verse 48, so he gathered all the food of the seven years, which occurred in the land of Egypt. He placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from his own surrounding fields in the midst of the cities, is the idea there. And they obviously arranged it so the transport wouldn't have to go any further than necessary for storage. In verse 49, thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, exceedingly, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring, for it is beyond measure. All right, now this is verses 46 through 49. One, verse 46 now provides the reader with a solid chronological notation for the historical record. Two, that is, quote, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph ben Shelashim, Shanah, Bet, Azad, Lamed, Paneth, Pharaoh, Melech, Egypt. Three, now we have dated Joseph's birth in 1695 B.C. at the tail end of the second seven-year bargain Jacob made with Laban. Remembering back, for Leah's hand, Jacob agreed to work for his uncle Laban for 7 years. And he pulled the old switcheroo on him and slid Leah under the sheets in the dark. Probably had a couple glasses of wine, I would think, for celebration. But anyway, and he wakes up and finds out what Laban did. Laban, the conniving, deceitful believer that he was, believers can be just as ornery as an unbeliever, talked him into serving another 7 years, and he would immediately give him Rachel as his wife. Over that next 7 years, they had all those kids, 12 kids, plus their sister. In that seven-year period, that is between the two wives and then the two concubines and each of the wives, their maids that they brought into the picture. So, on that second seven-year the latter part of that 7-year second contract that Jacob made with Laban, Joseph, towards the tail end of that, was born. And that was 1695 B.C. So for this would date then verse 46 at 1665 B.C. If you'd like to keep track in regards to the time frame in the scriptures in your Bible, like I'm doing right now, there you have it. So five now, our context strongly suggests that the 7 years of plenty begin contemporaneously with Joseph's promotion. That was the initiation, if you will, the ceremony and all that. It was the initiation of those 7 years, first 7 years. So six, this would date the severe Egyptian famine historically in the years 1658 through 1651 B.C. Understand, we're going backwards in the dating schedule in the before Christ period, going down to zero. Then after death, A.D., whatever they want to call it, then we increase the numbers. In the Jewish calendar, we're some 5,700 years or so into history. No, mankind has not been on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years. We've been around for going on just about 6,000 years. Now, how long the terra firma has been here in existence, we cannot date that. Indeed, it may have thousands or hundreds of thousands of years attached to it, as it was created initially for angelic recreation area. They didn't go to putting in Bay of Sandusky for their vacations. They went to planet Earth, see, or wherever, Disneyland or Disney World. They went to the world. So, you can either buy into, as our previous president would have said, fake science, fake news, or you can buy into what the scripture teaches. And trust me, you're not in the majority if you do that. The blindness of people just with doctrine, it astounds you sometimes. How otherwise highly intelligent people can fall for this kind of scientific tripe that is pushed on societies. But they know how to manipulate the STA. Who is an expert at that? Well, I can tell you, the ruler of the world. Satan himself and his demonic entourage that goes around influencing people at certain levels, if not possessing, to spread his propaganda. So, back to our text here. Excuse me. The famine would have started in 1658 B.C., 7 years after Joseph stood before Pharaoh, and lasted until 1651 B.C. 2 years into the famine, essentially, he will be reunited with his family. So, seven now, Kerrville, in his books, The Exodus Problem and Its Ramifications, Volume 1, pages 134 through 135. He did two volumes of extensive, unabridged work of solving the Egyptian dynasties and the Exodus situation as it's contrasted with secular history, to put it in its proper perspective. It was required reading for seminary. Trust me. Unless you're just deep into history, it's one of those kind of books. It's work to get through it. But needless to say, the work in itself is extremely beneficial. And he resolves a lot of the conflicts that the secular historians have tried to do in dating these Egyptians all in dynasties all in sequence, 1, 2, 3, 5, and not recognizing that there was dual dynasties operating at the same times at different points in times in history, dual leaderships and pharaohs operated just like Amenhotep and Sesostris and all these other things, so not putting it in his right time frame. But he does. He does a very excellent job on it. And he indicates the records show a famine in regards to historical records during the reign of Sesostris first, the king, second king of the 12th dynasty, the son of his father Amenhotep first. So there is a historical record, secular history, of a great famine occurring during this king's reign to show you that we're still in the definitely in the ballpark of accurate isagogics in dating in regards to this. So an inscription appears in the tomb of one Ameni, that's his name, that dates the record in the 25th year of his own official capacity and in the 43rd year of the reign of Sesostris first under whom he served. So Sesostris the first was around for quite a while. Joseph was around for a lot while. He was 110, 30 or somewhere in there. I'm not good with birthdays. When he died, so Sesostris the first, you know, he lasted for quite a while. And there's an inscription that reads point 9 in part. The inscription reads, "No child of the poor did I afflict." And if you've been following along in regards to inscriptions we've seen from pharaohs and letters, a lot of the thinking is parallels. How they record these things in regards to this. As the pharaoh wants these people want to leave a good impression in regards to just how just and great they were in a lot of cases. So we see the same thing going on here. "No child of the poor," let me read this, "did I afflict. No widow did I oppress. No landowner did I displace. No herdsman did I drive away. From no small farmer did I take away his men for my own works. No one was unhappy in my days, not even the years of famine. For I had tilled all the fields of the name of Ma up to the southern and northern frontiers. Thus I prolonged the life of its inhabitants and preserved the food which it produces. No hungry man was in it. I distributed equally to the widow as to the married woman. I did not prefer the great to the humble in all that I gave away." So some try to equate now Ameni as being Joseph. But it is more likely that he is a subordinate, albeit politically powerful, following the protocol set out by Joseph, putting himself here in his tomb in the limelight to make himself on his epithet. I was a good leader. See, and you can probably expect the subordinates. Joseph was second most powerful. It doesn't mean that people under him were not powerful in and of themselves, in their precincts, his governorship, things of this nature. And the way I see this, the way I look at it, someone who is serving at the same time Joseph was busier, you wouldn't expect anything less from them in regards to how they conducted their affairs. But to me, Joseph just strikes me as a person that would not put up with someone under his authority that was otherwise unjust and did not disperse right. And obviously, when you have good leadership, then you usually have good following in regards to the situations. So, On the other hand, we do have a secular reading here that describes during this time of Sesostris, this great famine that went on. Because remember, well, you can't remember because we're not there yet, but when people come, the Egyptians come to Pharaoh for their food during the famine, go talk to Joseph. He's handling it all. See? So Joseph is overseeing all this. 11 at the minimum here. The inscription meets the criteria for the famine of Joseph in three major aspects. First, the famine lasted a plurality of years. Second, preparation was made in advance to meet the famine by the gathering of food. And third, finally, the food was distributed during the years of famine, as brought out in regards to the inscription. So 12, now another historical incident that has not been dated exactly, also recorded in the early 12th dynasty, is building of a canal that could have greatly expanded the tillable soil of the Nile Valley. In fact, it's a canal that runs perpendicular to the Nile, and that canal is still there today. Verse 13, to this day, among the natives, it is known as the Canal of Joseph, Youssef, and is so named on modern maps. So, I will once again do a little show and tell for you. Not the entire picture of Egypt here, Goshen, where the Jews are settled at eventually, but for our intents and purposes, the Nile River running down. And today, you see this tributary line that runs along the main Nile River. It goes all the way up here. It's called Bahr Youssef. The stream, canal, river of Joseph, here referred to as Joseph's Sea. And it's still called that today. There's so much evidence in regards to biblical history that's still prevalent and known and by the people, the indigenous people, in regards to many of these countries. It's not even funny. But, of course, secular scientists aren't going to give them an ear. They're not going to tell you that. So that takes us back to our last class, a couple classes, in regards to Joseph being given authority and power way beyond just storing up grain in granaries, that he was in charge of the entire infrastructure system. He is responsible at least for getting this canal built. Or why else would they name it that? So that was point 14, what I just referred to. This piece of infrastructure harks back to Joseph's authority to build in Pharaoh's final words of confirmation back in verse 44, quote, without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt, end quote, of what that truly meant. All right, 15, having provided the details of Joseph's commencement ceremony, and Moses now resets to a more general tone of Joseph's activities, simply stating now in verse 46b, and Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. While Yasah, Joseph, Min, Laman, Paneah, Pharaoh, Wow, Abar, Bet, Kol, Eris, Egypt. So 16, the clause is a conventional statement that Joseph went about Egypt to execute his responsibilities as the new vizier. He first went about establishing himself, as in the previous verses, and then this one emphasizes implementing his game plan as he would have to travel here to oversee all the projects that was going on. What a life. as dull and as boring as it was, the 2 years being in prison, being a slave, 11 years before that, God sure made up for that. Being confined in one space. Now you have the freedom to go about all this land and have everybody kiss your feet while you're doing it. I'm not saying that he would do that in an arrogant fashion. I'm not implying that. But you get the drift. He would say, where I come from, yee-haw, we're going to have some fun now. 17, verse 47 records fulfillment of the Pharaoh's dream as to the years of productivity. And during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. Wow, Asah, Ha Eretz, Bet Sheva, Shana, Ha Sava, Lamed, Kometz. End quotes. The plural Hebrew noun kometz, translated abundantly, literally means, quote, handfuls, end quote, and colorfully pictures the productivity as each head of stock producing maximum grain. They pull it in by the handfuls. As fast as you could, as fast as it was growing, they were reaping it. They were pulling it in. 7 years nonstop in an environment that would be made conducive, obviously, while you have your seasons generally and things, you get the idea here that God just really elongated the growing seasons as it might have been in regards to maintaining the fertility and weather, etc., for this unbelievable bumper crops that they were having over that period of time. So the Hebrew is very colorful in regards to describing certain things. So by the handfuls, the land brought forth by the handfuls. 19, along with overseeing building all infrastructure to enhance the agricultural and building storage facilities, which all had to be done, their granaries. Joseph gathered all the food of these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt and placed the food in the cities. While Kabatz, Kol, Akel, Sheva, Shana, Asher, Haya, Bet, Eretz, Egypt, while Nathan, Akol, Bet, Ha'ir. End quotes. The granaries or the silos, as they might have been constructed, whatever form they use, for your information, that is not the safest job in the world. I have relatives that come from the Midwest. Granaries are really big there. In Hutchinson, Kansas, they had a series of silos there that was, for a while, declared to be the world's largest silos for grain. But that grain kicks up dust, and that dust becomes very fine. And all it takes is a spark, and great explosions can occur within. So, just thought you might want to know that. Something I picked up in my life, learning in that regards. So 20, now the storage facilities were all placed in urban communities, drawing their resources from the, quote, the food in its own surrounding fields. Okel, Sada, Ha'ir, Asheth, Sabib, Nathan Toweki, end quotes. So here you can see just how organized and structured Joseph was in performing his duties while Pharaoh was so blessed, as Potiphar was, to have this man on his team. And that's because he uses common sense and logic in regards to organizing all this. 21, that the farming communities were outside the city areas, which would be typical. To save time and transport, he cordoned off areas around each city as the place for deposit of their 1/5 tax, 20% tax. So you get the idea that he mapped out basically the geographic regions of Egypt with the major cities. And he said from this areas, from these counties or whatever, however you want to look at it, their deposit will go in this major city that's part of it. And obviously, that saves time and effort in regards to transporting the grain to try to put it in some central location. It also, point 22, this would make dispersing in the time of need easily accessible no matter where in Egypt one might live. So you don't have to travel all the way to Columbus, Ohio to get your food stamps, see, or whatever. 23, verse 49 now, records just how abundant the produce was, as, quote, Joseph stored up grain in great abundance like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring, for it is beyond measure. To Sabar, Joseph Bar, Kaf, Kol, Hayam, Ravah, Meod, Aki, Kadal, Lamed, Safar, Ki, Ayan, Nisapar. So 24, while a 20% tax may seem high, this portion of productivity indicates a surplus almost beyond imagination. Almost beyond comprehension. Just how much food was produced over this 7-year period in this one nation. And you got to figure, and of course, the environment would have been different back then to what we recognize a lot today in regards to the Middle East, whereas a lot, majority of Egypt, etc., is sand and dry. While that probably exists in parts, nothing probably what we see today. A lot more lush, a lot more green, as we, as you might know, in regards to Jews settling in the land of Goshen, that was an extremely fertile area up by the delta in regards to Nile, and it had a large portion of a land tract that was associated with that. So, anyway, but either way, the Nile would be a main source of their watering, irrigation, and things of that nature, plus the canal that Joseph had built to expand that. So 25, the phrase, quote, the sand of the sea, end quote, is likened to all the offspring born in the Jewish race and their Semitic brothers throughout history. In regards to Abraham and Jacob. That's an Abrahamic covenant, a promise given to the fathers that their descendants would be like sand of the sea. And it came beyond, just beyond the Hebrew race, as it also included some of the other Semitic races, Esau, etc., that came out of these lines. 26, now the Hebrew verb tesavar, translated stored up, in parentheses, means to pile in heaps, picturing the granaries as being piles upon piles in storage. In spite of best efforts in record keeping as to the magnitude of how much grain was collected, this became impossible as amounts became immeasurable. Whatever you can conjure up in your thinking, we can understand that it was enough food to ensure all the inhabitants of Egypt were fed and didn't go hungry throughout the next 7 years of famine, plus the rest of the world coming to Egypt to get food, purchase food from them, because the famine spread throughout the entire civilized world as it was at that point in time. That's a lot of food. A country is one country supplying the food for an entire world, essentially. So, yeah, it became immeasurable. Pull out the canes, the measuring canes, we can't keep up. So 28, at a point it obviously became clear that God had blessed land so much that any lack during the time of famine was unimaginable. But yet the famine became so severe that quickly how they forgot in regards to how God had blessed them previously to get them through that. So you had the paradox, the situation before you. So 29, the surplus of abundance in living grace. That's essentially what this is providing for the people. Living grace at a time when living grace is going to be hard to come by apart from what has been brought, what is provided by Egypt. So the surplus of abundance in living grace is designed to illustrate that God's grace is immeasurable and all-sufficient to face testing in times of need. That is a spiritual parallel that you can draw from this whole physical scenario as it occurs in regards to the life-giving food that is provided for Egypt. And it is a reminder of just the depth of God's grace that really, when you start looking at everything, you know, sadly, sometimes I hear, you know, that people don't really appreciate God's grace. They come out; it comes out in words that I don't look at God's grace as being deep enough in regards to their life. You know, in so many words, with such an idea, God's grace is around us now. Obviously, God's grace has a limit, but to find that limit is almost immeasurable when you look at the terms and conditions that are provided for mankind and giving men opportunity in order to escape the punitive actions of God otherwise. And then how much grace He provides for us. How you can live a life serving a perfectly righteous God with a sinful nature body. I mean, if you can't grasp grace from that concept in and of itself, I don't know what else to tell you. And astute, just believers recognize God's grace to that limit. 2 Corinthians 9:8. For Paul, he obviously understood that Paul had a complete handle in regards to the sin nature, its impact and effect in regards to the Christian life and for his own person, obviously, as well as others. He records, verse 8, 2 Corinthians 9:8, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, that is that always having all sufficiency in everything, you may have an abundance for every good work. Now, obviously, the grace is provided for the purpose for us to serve God and apply Bible doctrine in regards to our life. But it's all sufficient. I mean, yes, I know it's easier said than done. But if you can't pass a test, it's not because you can't pass a test. It's just because you choose not to. Because He's not going to test you beyond your capability. Your SCA will convince you sometimes otherwise, but He will not. There's a promise. You can take that to the bank. If failure comes from weakness of will, weakness of the flesh otherwise. I would prefer to say that, because the will, you may be willing, but your flesh, just your SCA is just that strong. But it's all sufficient, and obviously the purpose is to apply doctrine at the highest level possible in regards to our Christian life. And then compare chapter 12, verse 9, in regards to Paul. Now, Paul had a lot of perks and benefits attached to his person. He was tested beyond all the other apostles in his life. Jesus made it clear to him at the very beginning of the get-go that this is what's going to happen, and you're going to be tested like you wouldn't believe. You're going to suffer. But that didn't stop Paul's positive volition. See, wild horses cannot stop positive volition. That's just the way it is. That's the nature of volition. Any more than wild horses can drag negative volition out of the mire. And Paul actually got to do a trip to the third heaven, etc. And there are certain things that was attached to his person that he experienced. That he could have very easily, with his STA, gone overboard, became arrogant about, prideful, things of this nature. So, for God to help Paul keep his STA under control, along with the testing, he brought him in this test called the thorn in the flesh. Oh, man. And that testing was permitting certain demon activity to actually place pain into his body, to make his body painful. And Paul records for us here, and I'm just going over here in general the text of Corinthians. He employs God three times to remove this thorn in the flesh. And this is God's answer, verse 9. And he has said to me, God speaking to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. So, for all the self-righteous people out there in the world that dismiss grace, that to look down upon, thunder knows that, all the believers in the world that recognize that they have an STA and they stumble in many ways, but yet they're hooked in and locked into doctrine, I say, I'll see you at the Bema Seat. We'll see which grace wins. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light us these things. In Jesus' name, amen.